This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Performers from rock, rap, soul, and heavy metal are all in Cleveland tonight as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame honors its 2009 inductees. Coming up, we'll explore the inventive exuberance of Elvis Presley with some experts and some of our listeners. But first, a Cleveland native who played with Elvis will be getting his due tonight from member station WCPN. David C. Barnett tells the story of a sole survivor named Bobby Womack.
Five wide-eyed Cleveland teenagers stepped into a Chicago recording studio in the summer of 1961. This was the Womack brothers' big chance, thanks to soul star Sam Cooke, who was a strict taskmaster as he coached them through their first session.
Since you're singing words, let's say them as precise as we can, huh? Yield not to temptation, for yielding is sin. Get me?
The initial assumption was that the sweet-voiced Curtis would be the focal point of the Womack brothers, but Cook biographer Peter Guralnick says the star was drawn to Bobby.
And Sam says, you listen to that rough-voiced one, you listen to Bobby Womack, he's the one that's really going to go places.
The Womack brothers had gospel in their blood, and Bobby says their father saw it as a way out of the ghetto on Cleveland's east side.
He used to always say, I'm telling you, you'll never get nothing going, because I can't afford to send y'all to college, can't think about it. He said, but you could sing your way out of it.
One day, the Staples singers came through town. Mavis Staples recalls hearing the Womacks at a local church with her father.
And that Bobby Womack, he was like a little preacher. We always thought he was going to preach. Pops thought that they were so good. He said, we're going to take the Womack brothers on the road with us.
But church music wasn't where the money was. Former gospel singer Sam Cooke knew this, and he convinced the Womacks to lend their voices to a pop tune. The original melody for Couldn't Hear Nobody Pray was given some new words with a very different meaning. Despite the objections of their father, who threatened to disown his sons for recording the devil's music, Looking for a Love was released in 1962 and shot up the R&B charts. Cook renamed the Womack brothers the Valentinos, and they landed a spot opening for James Brown at the Apollo Theater.
James Brown was very hard to work with because you had to be perfect. Everything had to be. Your shoes had to be shine. You had to sing like you were hungry, and we really were. You know, so by the time we came out of that, man, we were polished.
And ready for another pop hit. Writer Peter Guralnick says this new tune, co-written by Bobby, was unlike anything you normally heard on the radio.
It's a funny kind of a combination of elements, just that free rhythm, and it's got a country feel to it, it's got a bluesy feel to it, and it's got that soulful feel to it that all of this stuff had. They recorded it in March of 64, and the record was just breaking when they had it taken away from them by the Rolling Stones.
The largely unknown group of English musicians on their first tour of the U.S. had heard the Valentino single and immediately recorded their own version. The song gave the Stones their first number one hit in the U.K., and it buried the Valentino's version here. Bobby was outraged until the royalty checks started rolling in. Life was good. And then Sam Cooke was killed in a mysterious shooting in Los Angeles. Friends and fans were stunned. But another surprise was yet to come.
Within a very short period of time after Sam's death, within days really, Bobby began a relationship with Sam's widow, Barbara, whom he married maybe 2.5 months later.
Bobby Womack was condemned as an opportunist. Sam Cooke fans sent hate mail. Radio stations refused to play Womack's records. He was virtually blacklisted. Eventually, Womack found work as a session guitarist, playing rhythm on countless songs by the likes of Aretha Franklin, Wilson Pickett, Janis Joplin, and Elvis Presley. Then, Womack wrote an airy instrumental that jazz guitarist George Benson picked up in 1976. Benson invited him to play on the track, but Womack hesitated. He didn't think jazz records made any money.
I finally said, okay, I'm going down, and I go down to the studio, and I played the rhythm of it. After that, I left.
Breezin' won Benson his first Grammy, but Bobby Womack's slow climb back up was tempered by stormy marriages, the death of an infant son, and the murder of his brother Harry. Depression sent him to drugs.
Getting high was just, it was like waking up in the morning. I felt like I invented it.
He still managed to record a number of popular soul ballads, which featured long philosophical recitations over the intros. These earned him the nickname the Storyteller.
You know, people always ask me, say, Bobby, why do you always talk before you sing? You know, like I notice in most of your songs, you always have something to say.
These days, Bobby Womack has plenty of time to reflect on his life. He says he's put the drugs aside and lives a quiet existence in the Los Angeles suburbs. He doesn't perform much, but he's come home to be part of the star-studded show in Cleveland.
It's amazing how they make issue. And I respect that, but at the same time, I respect the audiences. Even though the records are old, the stories still remain to be true.
Bobby Womack is being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by Ron Wood of the Rolling Stones. For NPR News, I'm David C. Barnett in Cleveland.
I thought I'd let you know where I'm coming from.
Bobby Womack wrote his first song when he was 7 years old. He called it Give That Man Some Cover. Was based on his childhood experience of sleeping in the same bed with four brothers who fought over just one blanket. You can hear it on our website, npr.org. When your lights go dim.